say prison reform in Attica and so forth. Well, just some general observations. I think that it's important to recall the various signs of the whole dehumanizing process that surrounded the Attic event itself. The ones that were most noted in the press and so forth were, for example, Rockefeller's expressing sympathy to the family of the guards immediately after the massacre, but saying nothing about the families of the inmates. And then I found even more depressing the fact that 3 days after the killings, it was discovered that they had miscounted the bodies in the morgue there, the bodies of the prisoners. You know, in life as in death, all black people look alike. And you think, there's one thing we should be pretty good at this point is body counts, but even that wasn't managed very efficiently. I think a lot of the remarks of guards very much dehumanizing, de-individuating the inmates, referring to them as pigs, as behaving as dogs, etc. Now, all of that kind of remark reveals this dehumanizing process. There was another aspect of it, though, that struck me, and that was on the other side, so to speak, of people who saw the Attica uprising as a great revolutionary strike against the establishment. And there, as I pointed out to the distress of some of my friends, you had the same process of dehumanizing, where you have people say, well, you know, I don't know how many were killed, but it doesn't really matter. The point is that they struck a blow against the system. And that's, in a way, not entirely unlike the remarks of the governor and the guards and the right-wing press. Also in the left rhetoric, the inmates became ciphers in some larger scenario, some larger political drama, which quite robbed them of any individuality or any humanity. It seems to me that one of the things that, in response to this kind of horror, the church has a particular responsibility for is to underscore what to many people would seem simplistic and politically naive, but what remains the most elementary and yet the most fragile of all facts, and that is that these are human beings. That is, guards, inmates, and the society, which is so passionately divided on what the events meant. Well, I just a couple of other things. On the church's responsibility, I suppose we really ought to have something much more intelligent to say than most of us seem to have, or at least seem to have been saying, because the whole question of prisons is really bordering on some rather deep, almost theological assumptions. The word penitentiary, of course, related to the word penance. The whole notion of punishment and forgiveness and redemption and rehabilitation. While, you know, rehabilitation is a word that's preferred, you know, in what sense is rehabilitation, redemption, while pardon is a word that is used in secular discourse. What is its relation to forgiveness, penitentiary, to penance? There's a, prisons must be viewed, it seems to me, as something that touch on the whole symbology that a society is using. That is, they are an institutionalization of the symbols which the society hopes will reinforce its order. Now, that's not a bad thing. You know, I mean, that sounds law and orderish, but every society must have ways in which it symbolically and effectively reinforces and redefines its order, the order that it seeks, the order that it considers essential to its continued viability. And without approving of B.F. Skinner or other such mad and dehumanizing notions about human society, I think we do have to recognize that the whole prison debate has to go beyond the question of prison reform as it's ordinarily thought of in terms of being nice, you know, to the prisoners, of having more humane conditions for guards, as important as all of that is. But to ask more fundamentally, what is the purpose of prison? What is the kind of symbolic reinforcement that a society seeks? What kind should it seek? and what are the moral and even the theological presuppositions involved here regarding the nature of man, the nature of what is possible in a society, and so forth. So I don't know if the church's role is going to be very significant. I think it's going to be one to help a to help the society in this regard, as in others, to redream and re-envision some of its hopes for what kind of order it desires. Finally, I'd say that prison reform, whether one might call it prison reform or prison abolition or whatever, but the whole question, I think, is one that should have a strong and urgent claim on churchmen. And if there's anybody in your class or elsewhere who's kind of saying, you know, what would I like to get into in terms of relating the Christian gospel to specific human need, I would think the whole prison situation is one that's been waiting for some courageous and imaginative attention for a long, long time. Okay, that's about all I have to say.
All right, then we can open it up to questions and answers from the other room.
Dick, this is Weijo.
Hey, Weijo, how are you?
Hey, long time no see. I thank you very much for your time and your words. I have a lot of things to say, but I think that our students should take advantage, so I give this
to my students. What a difficult act of self-restraint that is for you.
Hello, Mr. Newhouse. My name is Gary. I worked for 3 months in Minnesota State Prison, and one of the things that I saw happening there and one of the struggles that was going on was, what do you do when you confront the beast in men, and, you know, whether it be the beast in men as guards or the beast in men as inmates? And you talked a little bit about humanity in your discussion, and I guess I'd like to know, all right, you know, when you have the beast, whether it be in the inmate or in the guard, you know, what do you do with practical reforms? You mentioned, I suppose, the philosophical or theological presuppositions, but I felt, you know, is there any way you can be more concrete and come up with any specific reforms from your, in your point of view of, you know, what do you do when you've got one beast in the yard with weapons and one beast outside the walls with weapons and both ready to eat each other up?
Well, I mean, I have no particular expertise that would qualify me to offer specific solutions for specific conflicts. I would say that you don't have one beast in the yard, you know, confronting another beast in the yard. You have, you know, two human beings with a potential to behave in a bestial way. One very elementary thing that certainly here in the New York City area and in the state system here that has become very, very evident is that in a way it is not a question of having to devise new laws, methods, or mind-blowing strategies to make the prisons both more humane and more effective in terms of the society's purposes, but it's a question of enforcing laws that are already there. That is, in many of the cases, the instances in which prisoners are demeaned and made less than men are in violation of the law, especially in the instances of just sheer overt brutality. Now, I think that there are a number of ways in which present laws can be enforced. One way is that there has to be a new kind of opening, a new kind of citizen access to the prisons. Unfortunately, and this is something that we in the church, I think, need to recognize as our responsibility in large part, the chaplains who presumably play this kind of role in the prisons are there, as in the military, needless to say, too often an uncritical part of the system itself. Now, I think we need to take, I mean, if you want one very specific thing, to take a good hard look at the quality of chaplain we have in prison. And in part, let me quickly add that I don't want to blame these men, because I think many of them are real heroes of the faith, and the ministry can be very proud. But they are men who are often terribly demoralized because there's not a very strong communication with the ministry outside, nor much interest seemingly on the part of the larger church. And therefore, just inevitably, they tend to get worn down. They tend to, just as people entering into any potentially brutalizing situation, to surrender the ideals and the hopes with which they originally intended to fight that system. Yeah, I did.
May I ask another question? Could you comment on the program that's going on in Holland in which outside citizens are teamed up with inmates on a one-to-one basis, and they try to work out the problems in that relationship on a one-to-one, man-to-man thing?
Yeah, I've heard about that, but I don't have any firsthand information on it. There's something similar here in New York, and I understand you're going to be talking with Art Simon, and Art Simon is better informed on this with regard to the New York City houses of detention than I am. But something similar with what are called, a correction aides, who are kind of paraprofessionals, largely from the black and Puerto Rican community, because, of course, the overwhelming proportion of detainees and prisoners here are black and Puerto Rican, while the almost the total contingent of guards and correction officers are white. Well, so that's something very similar. I think that's extremely useful. I think anything that opens the prisons up, anything that that helps the so-called correction authorities to be aware of continued public interest and scrutiny. And let me say that's not something that interest and scrutiny need not be hostile. Indeed, I hope it would not be hostile. I know that there are many, many people in the administration of prison systems who would welcome the kind of opening up that that I'm talking about. And indeed, there are some who have said that if you can talk about anything good coming out of a tragedy like Attica, that perhaps one thing is that grievances and outrages, which have been undercover and hidden in the dark for years and years, may now, one hopes, see the light of day and be corrected. Yeah, okay.
Mr. Newhouse?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to ask, on I've heard proposals made about abolishing all prisons, and I would like to know if you would agree with this, and if so, what kind of alternatives you would propose?
Yeah, I constantly find myself in unhappy disagreement with some radical friends who consider it an absolute cop-out to talk about prison reform, to say you have to abolish prisons. I'll tell you, I'm a believer in pedantic utopianism. That is, I believe that God's going to keep his word and the kingdom of God will come, and that the coming of the kingdom is continuous with history and with the human struggle. But I think that in our provisional moment of history, our utopianism must remain pedantic in the sense that it must be closely tied to immediate possibilities for change, and that we ought not to be too presumptuous about the uniqueness of our age as far as its potential for the achievement of any form of utopia. Having said that, I suppose implicit in that is that we might change, we might not call them prisons anymore. We might not even talk about them in terms of detention facilities. And, I don't know what other words we might invent. And maybe changing the vocabulary is useful, although changing the vocabulary is not, in most cases, to reconstruct the reality. There is going to be a place, so far as I can understand, in the nature of society, there is going to be a place or an institution or a procedure whereby the society censures those who step outside the parameters of permitted behavior. And there must be parameters of permitted behavior. I mean, to, I think, deny that is simply to enter into the kind of Charles Manson madness, you know, where there is neither internal nor external, good nor bad, we nor they, but all are one. And if all are one, then every kind of criteria for discrimination and judgment and award and disapproval is abandoned. And then anything goes. And given correct Christian insight into human beings' capacity for evil, I would not welcome a society in which there were not effective means of reinforcing with the widest possible parameters those patterns of behavior which are considered to be socially useful, constructive, and contributing to human happiness. So, I mean, whether it'll be prisons or not, it'll be something. There are some people who, I think it must be said with great sadness, and in any individual case it must be concluded with extraordinary reluctance, but nonetheless of whom it must be said that they cannot, for a foreseeable period of time, be permitted the freedom to behave as they would in a society if the society is going to survive. There's going to be some process of isolation, and it may be called a prison. Yeah.
Mr. Newhouse, you mentioned that some of the symbology was the prison was the institutionalization to preserve order. Now, isn't it true that people have often looked at the prisons to preserve order, and not in the real thing that should be done is to rehabilitate the criminal? What would you think are some of the ways prisons have failed to rehabilitate the criminal, and how they might change this?
Yeah, I would say, although I hesitate to say this in a telephone conversation because it's a long, it's something that can be easily misunderstood and would require a long and careful explanation, but I think the primary purpose is to symbolically and effectively reinforce the minimum required for social order. That's the primary purpose of prisons. Secondarily, it is to rehabilitate prisoners. Now, in fact, these two are related. And in fact, the prime reason for prison reform or for dramatic change in our whole approach to prison is because neither of these goals are presently being served. I think we make a great mistake if we appeal to the public for prison reform primarily in a way that makes it sound as though we only had concern, you know, for these poor prisoners. Now, on a humanitarian and Christian level, that must be, you know, certainly a deep and abiding and genuine concern. But what I think what the society needs to hear is that in its own interest, you know, we need dramatic changes in the way we deal with so-called criminals. Because obviously our prisons are, to an overwhelming degree, schools for higher crime. And, you know, the sheer statistics of return and the shuffling back and forth from prison to so-called normal life, you know, demonstrate as dramatically as possibly could be that that they are not working. They aren't doing what the society, they are neither rehabilitating the prisoner, nor are they protecting the society or reinforcing the order the society desires. But I think that that ought to be, you know, the main thrust, that we ought to say prisoner rehabilitation, yes, because otherwise it is a serious injury, you know, to the society. I think that's a politically viable selling point for dramatic change in penology. While the undergirding moral concern, of course, must be equally the welfare of the prisoners. One of the areas I might mention that I think we really need to look at very, very carefully is the whole relationship between psychiatry and penology and the, I believe, unconscionable ways in which people who were persuaded perhaps to cop a plea by you know, undergoing some kind of or accepting some kind of psychiatric judgment are put away for years and years without even the minimal legal recourses that prisoners have in conventional prisons. And this, I think, is an outrageous pattern we have in our society. We have literally hundreds of thousands of people who are, in fact, in prison without legal recourse, and in many cases without ever having committed a crime, aside from being declared by somebody to be mentally incompetent or insane and potentially dangerous to the society. Well, that's preventive detention. And I hope we all are terrified at the thought of a society that indulges in preventive detention. Yeah.
Okay. Richard, we thank you very much.
Hello.
Reverend Simon, please.
Yeah. I really don't have a five-minute introduction. I've been to a limited number of penal institutions, and as far as Attica goes, I know only what I've read, which is about what everybody else knows, I guess. The one thing I've been somewhat active with the last 9 months or so with a number of other clergymen is trying to establish here in the city a program of getting clergymen into the city jails to visit prisoners on the prison floors and in the cell blocks. And eventually, we've only made a beginning on this, and we hope eventually to get around with clergymen in all the jails here in the city. And we would like then to develop also some kind of a program that would involve congregations assuming some responsibility for men when they get out of prison, or perhaps a program which could include release on recognizance for men who are in jail only because they can't pay a small amount of bail. This has yet to be worked out, however. Okay, I'll leave it at that, and if anybody wants to...
Okay, we'll open it up for questions then from the students and see where we go from there.
Pat?
Yeah, sounds like my old friend.
Yeah, long time no see.
How are you?
I'd like to thank you for your participation and your words. Now, any question? Would you come forward? Yeah, here is a student who wants to ask you a question.
Hello?
Hello.
I just finished my vicarage in New York in August, and I remember one of the big problems in New York then was that there was such a backlog of cases that, somebody who was up for trial would have to wait in prison
right.
for up to 6 months. Has anything been done to
alleviate that? Well, they've made progress, but the backlog, I'm sure, is still very great. I frankly don't know what the figures are now. They claim they've made progress, but I think you'll still find men in jail who have waited, 6, 8 months. I think that's pretty common.
One of the aspects that you mentioned was the assuming by local congregations of sort of taking care of some men while they were in the process of being rehabilitated, or whatever you would call it.
Yes.
Do you have any practical suggestions on how this type of attitude could be fostered in a congregation? Because I think many congregations would be aghast at the idea of having prisoners, and it would be helpful for me at least to see if any suggestions on how this could come about.
Yes, I think you're right, and we still have to work out the particulars. One of the facts of life is that men who come out of prison usually need, a great assortment of help. It's not just that they need $20 cash to go to travel somewhere or help getting a job, but they usually, usually involve personal problems, family problems, job problems, just all kinds of adjustment problems. And realistically, not many congregations are in a position or equipped, to pick up that kind of a situation. It might wind up then being the clergyman who's already got too much to do is saddled with, a whole new set of problems just with one man he doesn't quite know how to cope with. One of the things we're looking into right now. See, we made the start with the visitation program in the Brooklyn House of Detention. There are 30 men visiting regularly there each week on the floors. And this soon, we hope, will expand to the Bronx and Queens. What we're thinking of doing is trying to put together a sensible package for perhaps a staffed center which could function with the visiting clergymen and perhaps with some of the congregations, but who would work full-time and be funded to make the kind of referrals and to work more intensively with the men in ways that I would assume most congregations wouldn't be equipped to do. But since this has never been, you know, I'm just speculating here because, to my knowledge, I just don't know of any place it's been done, and anybody's going to have to just try something and see how it goes. Quietest class I've heard in a long time.
Right. Is anything being done with juvenile detention centers? I know one of the big problems in Minneapolis, for example, was that the teenagers and even the preteens who got into these centers never did seem to get out. They just went from there to, you know, the St. Cloud Reformatory and from there to Minnesota State Prison, and you could look in their past and see a record as long as your arm.
Yeah.
And that seemed to be the place where I know some pastors in our area were talking about getting involved because the state institution seemed relatively hopeless. Have you
right.
got any suggestions of things
yeah,
that could be done?
To tell you the truth, I don't, because my experience there is just almost nil. I think the problem you mentioned is pretty uniform. I mean, I think that would be true just about anywhere. I assume what you mean by moving from the juvenile institution on up is that they were released from the juvenile institution only to get in trouble again and then go back to the, you know, graduate schools. But I'm sorry, I don't have a good answer for you on that.
Reverend Simon?
Yeah.
I know that the Black Panthers were in prison in New York for well over a year, maybe even close to 2 years, without a trial. And I'm wondering what relationship you see between the kinds of things that are happening politically in this country and the prisons. Many people have made that kind of connection, including Father Brown in Milwaukee. Could you comment on that?
Well, I think there are connections, all right. I'm a little less likely to make political heroes out of prisoners, I think, than some people. Even the Attica situation or George Jackson or, you know, there are other examples. I just am very leery about reading too much into that. I think the general social, political situation in the country certainly has a lot to do with quote radicalizing some of the prisoners. To that extent, I think it's you know, that there is a connection. I would hesitate though to move on from that and label, you know, every prison rioter as a political activist. But that's just my own reaction.
What then would be, for instance, the relationship between poverty and imprisonment?
Well, there's obviously enormous relationship in the sense, and here again, you know, it has immense political overtones. Most of the people lined up in prisons are poor. Most of them are black too, and those are facts that we can't ignore. Which means that you can't deal with the prison issue apart from some of the underlying causes, which really have nothing to do with the penal institutions at all. In my own neighborhood, we could reduce the rate at which we crank out juvenile and adult criminals immensely if we could begin to cope with some of the social problems here, some of the other problems like housing and employment and bad school situation. The connections are without question there.
Okay, thank you, Reverend Sipe.